Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 107 of Three Peeps in a Podcast. We are still in lockdown. We're still trying to keep our spirits high. But it's getting harder as the days go on, to be honest. I'm joined on the phone, or I say phone, it's Zoom, of course, by Matt Withers, who is the co-host on the bonus shows that we do that look at post-match reaction to the City games, which seem like a distant memory now. Matt, how are you doing?
It does, mate. Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Yeah, trying to make some sort of remnants of sense out of all of this, but yeah, good. Missing the football, obviously, but other than that, yeah, importantly, safe and well, and the family safe and well, so yeah.
We'll have a quick chat about the football, and I'll bring in our guest today, and that's Toby Osborne. Toby, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Obviously, very frustrated at the moment with the current circumstances, but, you know, soon enough, we'll be back to normality, hopefully.
Yeah, so Toby works on the radio on Sam FM. We'll get a bit more into his role a bit later on, and he also provides the commentary on Robin's TV. So we're going to get him into that. But just very quickly about the current situation and football. Everyone's got different views. There's all sorts of clandestine meetings going on at the moment. My personal view is that we hope that it will be played, remaining games will be played behind closed doors. But I honestly can't see us being at Ashton Gate watching football again until next year. Toby, what's your thoughts and views?
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as this season goes, I don't believe in the whole notion that the season should just be voided and that we should forget. Yeah, I just don't, for the credibility of the game, I don't really see how that is a viable option, given that in the Premier League, Liverpool are set to become champions. They've been unstoppable this season. It makes for quite an exciting scenario, potentially at the end of this season, with the football being played behind closed doors. I mean, I know atmosphere-wise, the games are going to lose so much, but I think from a football perspective, we're going to have this almost tournament-like scenario that's going to replace the Euros almost, which could end up being quite exciting. I think the way we all feel at the moment, we're so desperate for some sort of sport that even if we're sat watching it on TV and it's, you know, not quite the same atmosphere, and maybe the football's not in such good quality, we'll be kind of thankful anyway. But like you said, Patch, I think we'll struggle to see football as we knew it before back in, you know, until next year, because I just don't see how it's going to be possible to fill out stadiums until there's a vaccine or until they've, you know, everybody's been tested and it's clear that anybody coming into the ground is hasn't had the virus or has got the virus, for example. So yeah, that's my kind of position on it. So I agree with you on that one.
It's sometimes hard enough to get through the turnstiles, let alone being
it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I was listening to Simon Jordan on Talk Sport yesterday, and he was sort of saying that from a player point of view, how do you, you know, test players, but also from players, how do you keep players safe, you know, in the context of the game, you know, spitting, sweating, how are you going to keep players safe? And, you know, as soon as a player gets COVID, what does that then do to sort of the feelings and whether the game should be played and stuff? So I think it's, you know, although the talk about playing it behind closed doors is one aspect, I do still think that the player's security and safety, I don't know how they're going to get around that situation. I really don't.
Well, I think they're going to have to basically test them all. You know how hard it is to get tested at the moment. But if you think about the number of people involved with running a game, a match day without fans as well, times that by the four divisions, you're talking about 20,000 people probably. It's a lot of people, and it's a lot of testing to be done before that can happen. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad I haven't got to make the decision myself. Let's put it that way. But you know, as I said, yeah, last week
I was reading something today. I think I read today the AFL is saying about having it potentially at certain grounds, so almost like Toby was saying, a kind of tournament type scenario. But one of the options that they're potentially talking about is having a, you know, maybe even an Ashton Gate, but an Ashton Gate that would play a number of games for teams from various divisions. So it was almost like a central kind of hub that these games would take place over a number of days. So I think even that, they're still, you know, trying to see what they can do with it.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting times. Toby, you'll be hopefully in the fortunate enough position that you might actually be in the ground to commentate on this, should it be behind closed doors.
Well, yeah, from a completely selfish perspective, if it'd be great. I mean, it sounds terrible. I'd much rather, you know, there was the atmosphere of a game day anyway. But from a purely selfish perspective, we could have our biggest number of people kind of watching and tuning in. Provide that's on the proviso that we sort of have the rights to the games and all that sort of stuff. Because there was even talk early on of, I read somewhere, sort of BBC Channel 4 even getting involved in loads and loads of games being shown on television. I don't think that will necessarily come through, but yeah, purely from a selfish perspective, I think it would be great for Robin's TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just take a step back then, Toby. You're just not, this is your life, but let's talk a little bit about you. Are you from around these parts originally?
Yeah. So I went to school in Bristol. I've lived in Bristol all my life. Went to uni in Bristol, not actual Bristol uni, but I went to UE in Bristol. And so, yeah, I've been here all my life. All my friends are here. It's kind of, I don't know, unless I, you know, was given an amazing job opportunity, I sort of feel like everything I need is here anyway. So I've not felt the need to kind of move on anywhere else.
Whereabouts in Bristol?
So I live, it's kind of a bit, it's almost a bit sad, really. I live literally a stone's throw from Ashton Gate. I'm across Greville Smythe Park.
Yeah.
And, can you remember where the old Temple Bowling Alley was? Planet Kids, where they put those flats up in there. I'm in there.
Well, I actually do know exactly where you live because you bought that place off of a friend of mine and a listener to this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Darren McDonald, if he's listening, Toby is sat in your old house.
I'm sat in your corridor.
In your old
How
flat.
Bizarre is that?
He watched. Because he watched one of your Twitter videos that you did the other day, which we'll come on to, because I don't know how you've got away with that. and said, oh, the flat's looking nice.
well, to be fair, the thing that we'll talk about, obviously we'll talk about the video in a minute, but my girlfriend was most annoyed at me about that video because of the state of the flat. She was in a bad way. We'd had a Zoom call with family or something the night before. She was most annoyed at me because we hadn't tidied up when I actually did the video.
Yeah. So whereabouts in Bristol did you grow up? Obviously, you didn't grow up in the old Hollywood Bowl, but whereabouts in the Bristol?
So my parents actually live out in a village. It's not actually Bristol in some respects. It's more North Somerset Way. They live in a village called Tickenham near Clevedon.
Okay.
So we started in Portishead. I went to primary school in Portishead, or half of primary school, then moved to Tickenham with my parents. And then I've obviously now moved into Bristol.
Yeah.
This is my first place that I bought. So, yeah.
Cool. So what did you do degree-wise at UE then?
So did it was a funny one. So I did business and marketing at UE, which is what a lot of people do when they go to UE. But then I never really, I sort of, whilst, which I'll talk about in a minute, whilst my kind of 9-to-5 day-to-day job is along those lines, radio was always something I was kind of pretty, passionate about, interested in. Mm. I did a few different bits of student radio and stuff at UE as well.
Where do you think that you got that passion from? Was it listening to radio growing up and thinking that's something you want to do? Or
yeah, I think so. And I think, well, sport has always been my thing, the thing that I've loved the most. Love watching sport, wanted to be involved in sport in some capacity. And I think the thing particularly about sort of commentary, obviously I'm in the sort of early days of maybe trying to make a career out of it, but the thing about it's just being in that moment when something huge happens, there's a comeback or, you know, something happens out of the ground, out of the ordinary, or it's a big moment. Like, I know I wasn't commentating on it, but, you know, the Corey Smith moment when we beat United if you're there for that moment, you're the person that's sort of communicating that back across.
Yeah.
That's you get the biggest buzz out of that. And I think that's the thing that's always kind of appealed to me the most.
Yeah. So is this mostly listening to commentators on the radio rather than actual radio DJs, if you like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just if it was ever to get to that, the ability to travel the world, whether it's football or something else, just to be involved, not necessarily on camera or anything like that, but just to be, I think for me, just being involved, I think because I'm so passionate about sport, it's just always been an avenue I've kind of wanted to go down.
And before we get into your role now at SAM FM, in terms of sport yourself, playing, was it mainly football you were interested in?
Yeah, mainly. I grew up playing. I actually played a lot for quite a six. We were quite a good little team, actually. Portishead, I'm not sure if they still exist, Portishead Juniors, which was kind of the feeder team to Portishead Town, who do all right. Played for them up until sort of, I don't think I was about 14, 15. Then through secondary school, got more into rugby, was playing more rugby. And then I sort of went back to football again and was playing more football during the sort of tail end of school. And then I actually did some rowing at uni. Rowing became a thing for me for a period of time. But now more just five-a-side. I'm not up to...
Oh, in Patches League, then he'd be drafting you into his team.
I need a team. I'm sort of, well, obviously now we can't do anything, but it's been all five aside. But I mean, I'd like to play for. I've played a lot of cricket as well. I'd like to be able to play, you know, a Saturday or a Sunday sport. But given that I've got a bit of Ashton Gate every weekend,
you can't come me.
Cool. No, brilliant. Okay, so let's talk a bit about, so you've come out of uni. Do you go straight into your current role?
So I actually started working initially for Hargreaves Lansdowne at
I was there for 9 years.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And that was when Steve Lansdowne actually still worked there. So we would often avoid each other if we'd lost and try and find each other if we'd won.
how long ago was that?
So I joined Hargreaves in 2002 and left in 2010.
Wow. I mean, it must have changed quite considerably during that period of time.
We were up on Wallady's Road then, not down on the waterfront like they are now. So different world.
Yeah. Well, I started working, I sort of came out of uni not really knowing what I wanted, as kind of clearly what I wanted to be doing. I had a rough idea, but then sort of got a job there as I was in the pensions department. Whilst I was at university, I'd started doing a sort of just a bit of promo work at SAM FM and Breeze, mm-hmm. the sister station to SAM FM. Got friendly with Downsy and a few of the other guys who let me then come and sit on what was then the Saturday morning sports show on SAM FM. And then a job came up full-time whilst I was at Hargreaves back working as a sort of like events manager. So I was like, well, it gets me in the right place. I've made good friends there. So I applied for it, got that job. And then sort of did more and more on-air stuff. Got to do some quite fun things. Following the Bristol Bears as well, because, well, it weren't known as the Bears then, but the Bears up to Twickenham. We did various bits. I went to sort of like the fixture launch that they do every season at the BT Tower, and we broadcast from different things like that, which was good fun. But day to day, I work in advertising essentially across the brands that we have. And we've actually just been bought by a much bigger organization called Bauer Media, who own KISS and Absolute Radio and Hits. So it's a bit of a funny time for us as we're sort of adapting to their processes and stuff. And obviously they've done away with the sports show on SAM FM now, so which is a bit of a shame, but means I can focus more on doing bits with Bristol City and maybe a few bits with the Bristol Bears as well.
So in terms of your sort of day-to-day role at SAM FM Breeze, are you actually on the radio yourself doing presenting? Have you got a show, or how does it work?
No, I don't. I don't have a show on Sam FM The Breeze. We obviously, like I said, we used to do the sports show, and that was my main kind of on-air bit. I've done bits and bobs for the news department as well. I've done a little bit of sort of bulletin reading and that kind of stuff. But my main sort of focus from the on-air stuff has all been via Bristol City. But the sport, the World of Sport show, as it was the thing that kind of led me then into doing stuff at Ashton Gate, because I did a few bits and bobs just following the Bears and sort of got friendly with the likes of Tom Tainton, who you'll know from the Bears, Lisa Knights as well, and sort of kept trying to put my, you know, hat in the ring to do various different bits and bobs. It's very difficult because so many people want to be doing that kind of thing. And then eventually the sort of role to kind of bring Robin's TV, you know, up a little bit, up a notch kind of thing, became available. And I sent a few different clips of me doing various bits of commentary and stuff that I'd sort of done off my own bat. And Lisa, it was the first game I actually did, was the was Bournemouth during pre-season a couple of seasons ago.
That was when Mo Issa made his debut, wasn't it, Matt? And he actually played quite well.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
I mean, never seen him again.
No, but then he dried up a little bit with Peterborough at the end, didn't he? I'm not going to say that he was one that got away, really. But I'm interested, Toby, are you a City fan?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you are. I just always one of those things to get that kind of passion. You know, I love my football, but there's a difference between me watching football and teams that I quite like. You know, I quite like Man United, don't like Liverpool, but I can appreciate Liverpool and the way they're playing. But for me to be able to do your job and commentate and show that passion, I think there must be a different level when it's your own team and you're watching your own team play. But then you've also got that balance, I guess, from a professionalism piece of, you know, point of view as well.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because you're sort of, because it's obviously the club's own channel as well, you're conscious, there's got to be a little bit of bias there, but you don't want to, but you've got to reflect what's going on. I mean, I know earlier on in the season, there was a point where they were playing poorly, and I sort of learned from the fact that I was trying to almost butter up the performance unnecessarily. Well, you know, everybody knew that they hadn't played particularly well. Lee Johnson came out and said afterwards, we were awful today. Yeah, at the end, I was still saying, you know, there's plenty of positives to take.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sort of, you know, no one cares. If you're allowed to be critical, it's just whether you're doing it in a sort of constructive way. But certainly I think it helps. I'm a City fan.
It's funny you saying that, because I think even with how I met Patch on Radio Bristol with Jeff Twentyman, I think both me and Patch are quite constructive, you know, and we don't go on there and if the team have played badly or if we completely disagree with something that Lee Johnson's done, you don't kind of slag them off, whatever, you try and be constructive, whereas there are some others that you listen to that you think you're just out to vent and have a go. So yeah, I can understand why you would feel like that, and you know, the role that you do, you've got to be professional with it and give a balanced view, haven't you? So
yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's a difficult one at times, but I, you know, there's no point, as even as a fan, if I wasn't doing anything to do with, you know, Robin's TV, there's no point just starting a sort of a slagging match with other fans and like, you've got to be constructive and try and look for the positives. Admittedly, people have to hold the team and the management to account and everything, but you've just got to do it in a way that's less abusive. And
yeah, completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've been doing it a couple of years now, is that right?
Yeah, a couple of years. So obviously I'm just desperate for them to kind of take the next step.
Obviously, yeah. Aren't we all? But in terms of how you've sort of progressed in the last couple of years, have you spoken to or taken advice from other commentators about the notes that they make and the facts that they've got on all the players? How do you approach each game now?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, actually, because I, at Bristol City, obviously, naturally, they're not a TV channel by nature sort of thing, that it's in the relatively early stages, Robins TV, of becoming more of a kind of accomplished channel where they want to put as much content out as possible. So we're kind of learning as we go along. So there's not always been necessarily somebody there that's given me kind of honest feedback on how I sound, whether I'm saying the right things. You've usually got to wait until
I message you and tell you if you've done a bad job.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and that's good. That's the thing. If I feel like I'll get home and my girlfriend listens sometimes, or my dad will listen, and they'll say, "You just keep saying of course or kind of little word," like, and that's good, because I want to hear that. So I stop saying those kind of cliche phrases. But I've tried to send a few clips off to Sky, for example, just to see if I can gain some feedback. And I've had some good feedback from when I say good, constructive feedback from sort of Rich Hoskins up at BBC Bristol as well. Because there was a point before Robins TV where I was kind of going to maybe do a bit of work with BBC Bristol, but because of the commitment of you know, following Bristol City each week, it wasn't going to really work. But I've had some good feedback, and then it's just reading up on other commentators, techniques they use in researching players. One of my good friends works with BBC Bristol.
Yeah, sorry, carry on.
I guess it's just a case of kind of trying to work out what other people do, take little nuggets of information from them.
Yeah, I remember watching a documentary. I think it was when John Motson was about to retire, and he had all these mega massive books with notes on every player from the last 70 years or something daft. Obviously, that's a bit different in his world, because he's commentating on different clubs every week.
Yeah.
So he has to know the ins and outs of lots of different clubs. But at City, obviously you know the players that are there inside out, but it's when the visitors come, and sometimes I'm someone who just focuses on my own club. I don't really care too much. I'll watch the Championship on Quest or whatever, but I wouldn't be able to tell you more than four or five players in any other team. So how do you go about that? Do you have to research it and use some technique there?
Yeah, it's just generally throughout the week, kind of, I'll never leave it till the last minute, but throughout the week leading up to a game, just have a little look at the kind of the opposing team's previous form, look back on when the teams have sort of faced each other head to head over the years. Good to have those kind of little nuggets of information. Any sort of standout moments, I always look back and see if any of the sort of cope, because obviously Lee Johnson, Jamie McAllister were players not too long ago, whether they've sort of previously been involved in any games in between the two clubs. And then just getting a real idea. I often think as well, it's you can get sort of bogged down in the sort of mundane sort of statistics of different players, and that it's always quite nice to have little random facts, if you can find them, about certain players, whether they started their career playing in the, you know, Dutch league and Robin van Persie was playing in the same team. You know, those little facts are always quite interesting to kind of draw out of, you know, get off the internet if you can find it. And then also, I suppose, if you've got a good co-commentator, someone like Thomas Callas, for example, he's obviously played a lot with the national team. He's come up against some cracking players, you know, over the years, I'm sure. And it's always, I often, when a player comes up to sit with me, I kind of want to make it as laid back as possible, just to see, because often they're on edge. They're used to being media trained and knowing the right thing to say. It's quite good if you can sort of just draw those random, funny little nuggets of, you know, insight out of them if possible.
Have you ever been at a point where you've got this really interesting fact about a player and he hasn't yet done anything in the game, and you're like, I'm really desperate to get this bit out?
If a player just goes under the radar for the full 90 minutes, and you've I've done it before where I've been so sort of nervous, particularly in the early days of doing it at City, I've been nervous about doing the commentary, and I've had all this information laid out, reams and reams of notes, and I've just rattled through the whole lot in the opening sort of 15-20 minutes, and then I'm thinking, Christ, I've got nothing interesting to say.
And so I bet it's a dull game as well.
and it's a nil-nil, and nothing's really going on, and no one's been booked or anything, and there's been no shots, which more recently has often been the case.
Has often been the case, yeah.
Well, so the next question is around the commentator's curse. I think I can remember on one occasion where you you fell foul of that. But is it something that you're nervous about saying that, oh, they're going to go up to into the playoffs now and there's like 2 minutes left?
Yeah, well, I don't know. The thing is, you kind of, it's one of those where I think last season we won, I'm not sure what game, I think we won, I don't think it was as late as the Millwall game where we won away and it was Patterson that scored. I don't know. I sort of said something where I was like, I tried to keep positive because I'm like, these are the moments you sort of look back on then as a fan. If you're watching those clips, the moment we went with, we kicked on and got into the playoffs. But then you almost, in the back, like you say, in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, I've just said that now. It's all just going to go pear-shaped. The whole thing's going to go wrong. But yeah, I am aware. I must admit, I am aware of that. You kind of, particularly at the late stages of games, if they're hanging on, you do become quite aware. You're almost, you think to yourself, this bit could be sort of clipped up and used now. So I've got to really care for what I say and make sure it all comes out smoothly, particularly the Charlton game where Brownhill scored and Palmer, chipped that ball over the top. And we just screamed. And I look back on that, I was like, it was a golden moment to just say something perfect. And it didn't quite come out in the way I wanted it to.
There's still time, Toby. There's still time.
Yeah,
so obviously we're not really clear what's happening next. But as I say, hopefully we will see some football at least, whether it's behind closed door or not in the next few months. But so outside of Bristol City, Toby, and outside it, in lockdown, you've done a couple of Twitter videos I just want to talk about. The first one was taking your dog for a walk, and I saw it and I thought it was hilarious. And then I thought you were going to do more and more of them, and they didn't really come until you did commentary on your girlfriend being very ill. How the hell did you get away with that?
Well, it was funny. The dog one, I was kind of... I'd seen something that was actually... The inspiration for that was taken from Clive Tildesley, who did sort of a commentary on his wife making lasagna, if you haven't seen it already.
I've seen it, no.
But yeah, because that was the first one that everybody seemed to be aware of on Twitter. So then I did the dog one, and then, of course, and I mean, obviously you did see the Bristol City one, but Andrew Cotter did one, I'm sure you've probably seen that one, of his two Labradors. And obviously he's got such an sort of iconic voice that his just went absolutely mental online.
Is that the one with the bone?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. If you've not seen it, Patch, it is brilliant.
I haven't.
Yeah. So good.
So I was like, I can't really do another dog one now because it just looks like I'm trying to mimic that one. So then weirdly, the second one was started because somebody from a show that Al Murray, the pub landlord, who I'm sure you'll be aware of, was putting together. They were creating a show essentially of what people have been up to during lockdown, how people have been creative. Somebody from his show got in touch with me and said, "We've seen your dog walking one."
Really?
So they got in touch. They said, "We've seen your dog walking one, but we've also seen Andrew Cotter's dog walking one. And that one's gone far further online." Then they said, "Could you make another one just for us?" So I then went and made this one of my girlfriend throwing up and being hungover. So I went and did this. We were on a call just like this. I was on a call with Al Murray last week. And he sort of interviewed me about where it all began. And then he played the clip, and then I commentated on him downing a pint and eating a packet of crisps. Just bizarre. This is just the most bizarre period of time ever that I found myself doing random things like that. But
What was that, on a podcast or something as well? Or
no, so that was that is a full show. So they're creating a TV show out of that.
Okay.
So they've obviously researched and sort of sourced lots of different clips, probably similar to the one I did of various, people doing things that have gone viral or whatever. Mm. And they're going to use that, and I think they're just waiting to find out if they can get the show commissioned now, and then we might see it on our screens. We don't know.
Brilliant. Yeah, I was thinking the other day that, you know, we've been in this for now 6-7 weeks, and we're going to be in it for a few more months. But there must be a wave of programs coming in the next 6 months, year, that are going to have sort of this in it, like.
Yeah,
are they gonna have lockdown in EastEnders, or not that I've watched it for ages, but that sort of thing. It made me think we're gonna be seeing this even years down the line.
Yeah, it's particularly things like the soaps where they just film every day, don't they? I'm not sure how
could they put them in lockdown and make a show out of that.
I know, I've no idea. It's just gonna be, we're just gonna have reruns of Gogglebox on all the time. So that's easy. Yeah. The film, they just all need a camera each and then they're sorted.
No one stood next to each other at the bar of the Cream Vic, two meter distance, but they shouldn't be open.
Yeah,
they're even running. I've noticed during the week they're rerunning classic Crucible snooker matches. It's kind of dear, oh dear, yeah.
Have you ever fancied commentating on a different sport other than sort of football or rugby? So you mentioned snooker there, Matt. That might be an interesting one for you.
Yeah. Whispering Toby Osborne.
No, I, to be honest, once this is all done, I'm going to try and get to some sporting events, not just off my own accord, and maybe just practice, you know, a bit of tennis commentary, maybe something I quite like to have a go at. Obviously something like motor racing is quite difficult because unless you've got all the cameras around you, which shows where everybody is across the track, that might be a bit more challenging. Or cricket as well is another big thing. I think watching the England win the World Cup in the summer and that sort of iconic bit of commentary, I forget his name, the guy for Sky Sports, the New Zealander,
Ian Smith.
Yes.
Is it Smith,
like that is the he just nailed that moment perfectly. So yeah, that sort of thing is sort of made me think I'd quite like to give a few other sports a go.
Yeah, awesome. And you mentioned Clive Tildesley just then, and it made me think in terms of if you had to pick a commentator that you not necessarily model yourself on, but that you were inspired by the most, you know, back over the years. Have you got one? Obviously, Martin Tyler is the main man on Sky Sports, and you've had the radio commentators such as Jonathan Pearce, obviously being a Bristol City fan as well. Have you got any sort of heroes, if you like?
I when I first started at SAM, I was very aware that because naturally you associate radio presenters and anybody that does the commentary was having quite sort of gravelly distinct voices, and I've always been a slightly sort of insecure of the fact that I don't necessarily think my voice is overly strong. But something that which Dalsey sort of, you know, said that stuck with me when I was doing a few bits of a Sam with them, he sort of said, look, in any, as long as you can kind of create a bit of personality and you can create a picture, it's all about light and shade with people, you know, voices on the radio. So that sort of stuck with me. But I think, yeah, Jonathan Pearce is quite a big one. I do like Darren Fletcher on BT Sport. I like Chris Jones, who does the rugby, a lot of rugby on Five Live. I think he's really good. Martin Tyler, just the Aguero moment.
It's going to be a strange time when Martin Tyler retires, because, you know, I'm like when Jeff Stelling goes on Saturday. Yeah. And incidentally, Jeff Stelling is going to be on the podcast next week or the week after. So looking forward to that. When he goes off of Soccer Saturday, it's just not going to be the same. When Martin Tyler goes, it's going to be weird.
It is. Yeah, the names Martin Tyler has sort of kept us all company on a Sunday afternoon for as long as you can kind of remember. Yeah, that is going to be really strange. And yeah, likewise with Jeff is the star of that show on a Saturday afternoon, and he does it so well. I actually really like the guy from a presenting perspective. I actually like the guy that sort of does the midweek games. I think his name's Jules as well. Sky Sports.
Yes, yeah.
I actually think he's really good. So I think naturally probably he'll end up filling that spot when Jeff moves on. But then Jeff's kind of got this personality that you can't really replace.
No, no, absolutely not. Okay, we're going to take a break there. And Toby, we'll just come back afterwards and just do a few more bits, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, coming back after the break.
Three Peeps in the Podcast.
Okay, welcome back. We've got Toby Osborne on the line and Matt Withers. So a couple of usual segments that we do on the podcast I want to just run through with you guys. So first one is recommendations. Now, in the last 6 weeks, I don't know about you, but I've watched a hell of a lot of telly and literally run out of things to watch now. So always used looking for what people are watching at the moment. So I'll kick off, if you like, because I've seen Toby's Twitter feed, so I don't want to steal any of his. So mine is Gangs of London, which is on Sky One. Very, very gritty. Very, who knows if it's true to life. Who knows what goes on in gangland. But yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. So I would, you know, maybe watch it before you watch it with your partner. But yeah, it's really good. It's a couple of people from the Peaky Blinders. So Joe Cole and the mum from Peaky Blinders as well, along the same lines. But yeah, set in, obviously, in London, little bit like lock stocky, but obviously heavy gangster related stuff. But if you're into that sort of thing, I would definitely check that out. And that is my dishwasher beeping, if anyone's wondering. So yeah, Gangs of London for me. Let's throw over to Toby.
Oh, so mine would be a toss up between, well, am I allowed to?
Do what you like, mate. This is internet radio.
Afterlife obviously has just the second series has just come out. I like a lot of what Ricky Gervais does anyway, but I think it's brilliant. It sort of takes you on a bit of an emotional roller coaster. The first series was a lot funnier than the second one's a lot sadder, actually, I found. But there's some of the characters in there. There's one character in particular who just absolutely does it so well. But the therapist, if you watch it, you'll know what I mean. He's just absolutely a vile man. But
there's one bit, Toby, in there, in it, without spoiling it, but there's one comment that he makes around a previous world leader in the past.
Yeah.
It, you kind of, oh my God, has he just said that?
No. Absolutely. And I actually listened to an interview with Ricky Gervais, and he said all the dialogue from the other characters are things that I want to say but can't get away with. And I can get away with them because I'm basically scripted it as part of their character, and they can as well. So yeah, there we go.
Afterlife was going to be my original choice, but I knew you'd been watching it, so I left that one for you. But I watched with my wife every episode of series two in one night that we just couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah, we did.
I think it was Friday night, actually, the day it came out. And you're right, it's not as laugh a minute as series one, but there and a lot more emotion, a lot more tissues got through on the second one. What I really like about it, because I've like you probably, I've followed Ricky Gervais since the 11 o'clock show and then Into the Office and anything he's done since, and I've on the whole liked the vast majority. But it's what makes me laugh is it's the same cast virtually all the way through everything. So he brought the caretaker back from Derek season two, and he played that the guy who hosted the show. Lots of different examples of that, and I'm actually a big fan of Brian Gittins, and it's actually a character. Brian Gittins is a character. It's David Earle is the actual actor, but he actually used the name Brian Gittins in Afterlife as well. The guy who is in some of the first series and he's in the second series, and he's the guy who's sort of lurking around in the background with the glasses and the mustache. You know the one. He delivers the papers in the second series.
He's the hoarder.
Of course. Yeah. So he is actually a character comedian in his own right.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, have a look and see if you look at some of his YouTube stuff. It's all weird, but very funny. And he's actually got a podcast as well, the Brian Gittins podcast. So that's again worth a look. But yeah, absolutely loved Afterlife, and because I've sort of crammed it all into one night, I think I need to probably rewatch it again, just to sort of see it, things I might not have noticed and that sort of thing. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. And Matt, obviously you said you watched it as well. What's your synopsis?
Yeah, I loved it. My only, and I don't know if this makes me sound like an old fuddy-duddy, my only thing with it was I thought in the first series there was a scene with the lad at the school when he walked past, the little ginger lad, and Ricky Gervais makes a comment to him.
What was the comment?
Yeah. He drops the C-bomb. But in the second series, I felt that it was almost that was being used every other word. And there's one scene with, and I forget the actress's name, but Margaret out of One Foot in the Grave, who's 100 in the second series.
Yeah.
And he's talking to her and he's sort of saying to her about the other people within the care home that she's in. And again, she refers to them dropping the C-bomb. And it just felt a little bit unnecessary. And that would be my only criticism. I absolutely loved it. And like you said, Patch, there were so many moments where you sit there and, no, I'm not crying. It's the smoke from the cooker or, you know. But yeah, that was my only downside for me. But other than that, yeah. And like you, I've loved everything Ricky Gervais has done. Derek, Extras, The Office. You know, I think he's tremendous. But yeah.
I know what you
mean. And for me, in terms of what...
I thought the same, and I thought the same, and even with the character that you said you didn't like, Toby.
Yeah.
A few unnecessary scenes in the pub towards the end that were a bit odd, but I think we all know blokes like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's very cleverly written, and some of the scenes, you know, I think there's one scene probably in the last episode, but with his dog, and again, you're just sort of thinking, yeah, people, millions must be in that position. So I think he's captured it brilliantly.
Yeah, brilliant. And basically now said there will be a third series as well. So
yeah.
Forward to that.
Which is unusual for him, because I'm pretty sure most of the series he's done have only been two, and maybe a kind of Christmas specials. But I'm pretty sure The Office. Yep. I think The Office was two series. I think Extras was the same.
Yeah, he's always been a two-series person, and that's something that he's always said as well. He said he didn't want to sort of risk doing a third series, but obviously, and he says, and people say it all the time, this is my best ever work to promote stuff. I think he genuinely believes it, and, you know, as much as it's never going to be The Office for me, because it's a completely different genre, but, you know, it is pretty great, and maybe he actually physically believes it this time and thinks, no, I'm going to do a third series. So,
yeah.
All right, Matt, what have you got?
So I think the thing for me, and again, something I've watched for years, but they've just released the latest series on Netflix, is Still Game, which is a comedy series. I think it was on the BBC. In fact, I'm sure it was on the BBC. But it's based in Scotland. And it's two old guys who have been friends for years and grown up. And they live next door to each other in a flat, and it's the sort of the community they live in and their friends, the pub they frequent. But yeah, it's a comedy series, and I just love it. I find it so funny. I think it's about series 8, and they've just released the last series. It was on, may have been BBC 3, but the last series was on BBC. They've just released onto Netflix. So and the box set is available. Either on Netflix or certainly on iPlayer, but yeah, I definitely recommend watching that. It's quite clever comedy. A little bit, it's not like The Office in terms of the way that it's set, but it's clever comedy. You know, you've got to kind of really watch it and listen out to it. And some of the characters, probably from series one, have remained all the way through. But it's two guys, I can't think of the actors' names now, but it's two guys who've grown up together, have started writing it, and this was their final series. I think they stopped making it for about 10-15 years because they fell out, or they fell out with one of the other characters, and then got back together, and they've done probably 2-3 series since then. But yeah, it's worth a watch. Still Game.
I must admit I haven't ever seen it, so I don't know. You, Toby?
No, I've not heard of it either. So yeah, that's definitely one.
Yeah, if you have a look on Netflix, like I said, they're showing the latest series on Netflix, but I'm pretty sure you'll be able to get the sort of old series as well on there.
And Toby, you said you had two. Did you actually say the two?
Yeah, it was just the other one was, it's more of a sort of along the sporting lines. You may have seen it already. Drive to Survive on Netflix, which follows follows two F1 seasons. And I've sort of not been a huge F1 fan since the kind of Schumacher days. And to be fair, I watched it, and whilst, you know, you're not, it doesn't sort of hammer, you know, all the technicals with when it comes to kind of racing. It's more of a, I just love anything that's behind the scenes, and you get to sort of see the real kind of characters in each of the teams, get to know a bit more about each of the drivers, and it actually follows a few of the drivers at the back of the grid as well, generally. So worth a watch, and it's made me since been much, I've kind of been watching loads of YouTube videos on, you know, various F1 bits and bobs since, so it's definitely worth a watch, even if you're not a massive F1 fan.
Ah, cool. Okay, lovely stuff. So as regular listeners will know, we always do a segment called Room of Doom, which is nothing like Room 01, but it's actually exactly the same. But we have to say that for legal reasons. So we're going to go around the table, and people are going to let us know something that annoys them or something that they would wish they could get rid of. So I'll go first, give you boys chance to get your answers ready. But mine is social distancing related, and it's the fact that some people clearly do not understand what that term means. So I have been trying to get out to maintain / keep the weight gain down to a couple of stone. not doing very well. The alcohol seems to be flowing quite well, and so does the food, because we're in the same house all the time, and all I do seem to do is eat and work. I'm trying to get out and do a bit of running every other day. It's just like 3 or 4K, and going up the cycle it is a cycle path one side, but it's a walking on the other side on the Avon Ring Road, and bikes are still going past very, very close. And one guy actually must have been out of control, but he almost knocked me over. And I'm probably about 18 stone now, 6'5", and this guy, if he'd had have touched me, I'm sure he would have probably come off worse. So it's basically social distancing and cyclists, I guess, that aren't adhering to it, because they go past so quick and can easily cause themselves and the person they hit a bit of mischief. So yeah, social distancing related for me. Toby, do you want to go next?
Yeah, it's hard to stay away from the coronavirus kind of theme here. Mine is about social media, and this sounds really sort of cynical, but when somebody does something good, keep it to yourself and just get that sense of fulfillment. I don't understand the whole need to go, oh, I've just dropped off a care package at my grand's, here's a selfie of me, right, or, you know, I'm volunteering or doing this, that, and the other. Just do it because you're doing some good. You don't need to tell the world about it. I mean, I understand in a lot of cases, you know, if you've got a real high profile and you need to be seen to be doing these things anyway. So rather than get the abuse of not doing stuff, you just put it online, which is fair enough. But everybody just seems to, there seems to be too many people, not everybody, doing things just for that social media picture sometimes.
And I think something you picked up on Twitter a few weeks back was focusing on positive news stories and not even coronavirus related. I mean, I was treating coronavirus, which I've now said on this podcast, I've said the word coronavirus probably 6 times, and I haven't actually probably said it in the past 6 weeks because I've been treating it like Voldemort from Harry Potter. I will not talk about it, but yeah, it's positive news. I'm just focusing on anything other than that word. So picking up those good news stories, I quite like what Russell Howard's been doing with his sort of good news channel, if you like. And when we were going through Brexit for the last year, I'm sure Sky News set up a channel that was Sky News non-Brexit related.
Yeah.
Why haven't they done that with this?
Yeah.
There you go. Take that one.
There's a trick there. There's your new channel idea.
I'll let you have that one. right, Matt, what have you got?
So all of the above, I completely agree with. Mine was going to be social distancing as well, but just in terms of, I walk the dogs over the field, and the amount of kids I see just sat around still as if they're not affected by it, and chatting and not doing anything other than that. But as you've already touched on social distancing, I'll choose something else. And it's a person, and it's Piers Morgan. Now, I quite like Piers Morgan, but of late, he seems to be, I don't know, I mean, I watched yesterday, unfortunately, I was kind of watching it between working and doing other stuff, so I didn't see exactly who it was he was interviewing, but it was a politician, and he just refuses to let people answer a question.
Yeah.
And he was deliberately trying to catch this lady out, who I believe was on there to talk about the sort of rise in domestic abuse. And he then starts hitting her with loads of other stuff about, when they carried out exercises back in 2016 and they knew this was coming and how would they cope with the pandemic. And he was just belittling her. And the fact, it was kind of ironic, really, the fact she was on there to talk about domestic abuse. And for me, he was abusing her with the way that he was a complete bully. And as I say, I do quite like him, or I have quite liked him. But after watching him yesterday, I thought, you're just a bully. You know, you don't let people think it's all about you. He's the same with Susanna Reid, to the point where I'm actually going to stop watching it now because he just annoys me, because I think, you know, you're not a balanced journalist, in my view. He doesn't let people speak. And if you don't agree with him or you've got a different view, well, forget about it. You're not going to have a decent discussion with him. It's his way or no way. For me, Piers Morgan.
Yeah,
it can almost go the other way as well. I argue that when these politicians go on to Good Morning Britain now, it's very easy sort of get out of jail free card at the end, where they just go, well, you didn't let me speak anyway, so how was I able to, kind of gone the other way. If he actually gave them a chance to kind of
exactly
themselves, then fair enough.
And that's the thing, you can let them, for want of a better phrase, but let them hang themselves, and he could quite easily have picked up on the fact that, yes, this minister should have known the program that he was talking about that was carried out, this kind of pandemic test exercise they did, but she wasn't on there for that. And it just, for me, I read on Twitter, Alan Sugar basically called him out as a bully, and various other people have. And he's got a lot of people that back him because of his style. And as I say, I quite like him because he will ask the questions that others won't. But yeah, yesterday it kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back. I thought, you are just being a bully.
I'm amazed people still go on there and speak to him, to be honest. It must be pretty desperate.
I think today they've said that he tweeted himself that they asked for a number of politicians and they refused to go on there. And you think, well, I'm not surprised. And sort of Toby's point, he kind of goes the other way. People won't want to go on there because all he looks to do is belittle them, in my opinion. He doesn't look to have a balanced discussion, doesn't ask the questions that us as the general public want to answer. It's all about him and what he does and how he looks.
So some of the things that Donald Trump's been coming out with lately are pretty radical, should we say. But Piers Morgan and Donald Trump were quite tight at one point. Is he still classifying him as a friend?
I believe so. But I did read again in the week that Piers Morgan had been sort of having a pop at Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, and I don't imagine Donald Trump takes fools gladly. So I think if he gets to hear the fact that Piers Morgan's been slagging him off, then they probably won't actually be mates for very much longer. But
strike him off. Not only have I been trying not to mention the word, I literally have not watched any live TV, if you like, for the last 6 weeks, because every advert is relating to it. Every show is a special. There's news bulletins, and I've literally just switched myself off from it, and I'm still finding out the crux of what I actually need to know and what I need to do to remain safe, and when we went into lockdown, because people message me on WhatsApp and tell me within seconds. I've literally just been living on Netflix, Prime, and now Disney Plus, so So yeah, kind of getting through a lot, and the recommendations are really useful. But back to the Room of Doom, what we do now is we vote. So you can't vote for yourself. So Toby, mine was social distancing cyclists, and Piers Morgan. So you've got to choose between those two.
I think I'll probably go with the cyclists and social distancing, largely because I do a bit of running myself, and I think cyclists just think because they're fast, that doesn't mean that the gap that they leave when they zoom past you isn't enough. So yeah, I'd go with your social distancing one.
Brilliant. And Matt, what do you want to go for?
Same for me, mate. Yeah, social distancing.
Cool. Okay. And I'm going to go with Piers Morgan because I've never liked him. So yeah, I think that's the first time I've won in a while. So thank you very much for that, chat.
Well done.
So how's life for you at the moment, Toby, in terms of what's life looking for you? What's your day to day? Are you managing to still do your work from home, that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, we've had a bit of a tricky day today at work. I'm fortunate to be one of the ones that hasn't been sort of furloughed at this stage. I mean, work the last couple of weeks, sort of day to day in the advertising side of things, as you can probably imagine, has sort of fallen away a little bit from my sort of 9 to 5. But I expect the next few weeks now, because I'm going to be taking on extra workload, and also because obviously some businesses are starting to open back up, hopefully as well in the coming weeks on a sort of social distancing basis, that I might start to sort of get a bit busier. And then I'm sort of still doing bits and bobs with Bristol City. I know they're doing this football manager thing at the moment, so there's potential to maybe be a bit involved in that. And then hopefully as soon as we get the green light on some behind closed doors football, a plan hopefully will be put forward then to how we're going to broadcast that on Robin's TV.
Mm. And if you need anyone to carry your bags for that, me and Matt are more than happy to carry your bags.
You know, I'd have you on at the first instance if I was allowed.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Matt, I know you work from home.
I work from home anyway. So I work for an insurance company, but looking after our call center telephony infrastructure. I work from home and have done for 4 or 5 years. So it's not really very different for me. It's other than
So how are you adapting to not adapting?
Yeah, it's a strange one. The biggest thing for me has just been how busy we've been, because it's meant coming up with a solution and putting it in place to enable our kind of call centres throughout the country to then mobilise to be in the home workers. So it's sort of new technology, not my part of the team, but other parts of the business kitting them out with laptops and mobiles, and then I've had to then me and my team sort of ensuring we can get the calls to them in the way that works. So it's probably been longer hours and lots more queries, because people kind of can't understand new ways of working. But other than that, it's kind of been pretty much the same for me, other than my other half, Jill, sort of she's still working and has to go into her office a couple of days a week, but for sort of 3-4 days of the week is at home. So I'm getting fed far too regularly, and oh, I've just been baking. Oh, really? I mean, it tastes lush, but I could really do without it. So that's been my biggest struggle. And of course, the sport, the football. I think it's strange, isn't it? Because I know we go through a summer with not having it, you know, when there's no Euros or World Cup, and it does feel like the longest sort of 2.5-3 months of the year. This feels different, but I think it feels different because there's just that we don't know when it's coming back. So, you know, when you've got that date in August to look forward to, you are counting down the days, and at the moment we can't count down the days, so it just feels further away than ever, really. So I'm desperate to come back. I said to Jeff before, when we were on the patch, I don't know how I feel about it being behind closed doors. For a number of reasons, you know, atmosphere, obviously Robin's TV is great, but does Robin's TV, you know, is that going to be free to everybody to watch it? You know, how are they going to do it? I kind of want it to come back, and want it to come back where I can watch it live with my mates and have a drink beforehand. But if it's all I can get, then I'll take it. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I was going to say, is I'd rather have have it behind closed doors than not at all.
Absolutely.
Assuming everyone's safe, as best they can be. But yeah, it would be something that I would still look forward to on a Saturday, watching my team play football, regardless of whether there's a crowd or not. But yeah, ultimately we want to be there watching it. And I've really struggled with weekends because I've got structure in place Monday to Friday. I'm fortunate enough to be able to work from home, and I'm probably busier now than I was before because I work in communication. So lots to do. But yeah, Saturday comes, there's a film title in that. Sean Bean, you're probably too young for that one, Toby.
Toby might have seen that. No chance.
but it's a good film. Sean Bean gets trials for Sheffield United, ends up
Sheffield there. United, yeah.
Yeah, classic.
Another recommendation.
Yeah, yeah. Take that one. I don't know if you'll find that on Netflix, though. the away trips. We make more and more of the home trips now as well, with sort of 3 hours before up North Street and things like that. So, yeah, it's a release that I'm not getting, and the weekends are a bit of a struggle, but it's something that is slowly becoming the norm. So it's more of the same for the foreseeable at the moment. But yeah, we don't want to finish on that. Tell us a joke.
Well, we'll appreciate it even more when we are back, I suppose. That's the good, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't think I'll ever take a match day for granted ever again.
No, and we do. We do, don't we?
Yeah, 100%.
We take a freshly poured pint for granted as well up until 2 months ago. Mm. I mean, I've even been looking at those, you know, those ones you can buy yourself, but I'm told they're not the best. Where you can pour your own pint. Drinking out of a can just isn't quite the same. But saying that, I'm getting some great little packages from BrewDog now and again. So
nice.
Clockwork Tangerine Citrus Session IPA is my favourite.
You need to get them to sponsor you now. They should be sponsoring this podcast.
I'm working on it. anyone's welcome, as long as they give us free food and drink. But Toby, it's been great to get you on. And we've been chatting for probably a year now over Twitter. And we actually met for the first time at the last ever football match at Bristol City versus Fulham.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were sharing the hospitality that day with the all the guys from this country, of course, weren't you?
That was good fun. And yeah, no, it was great to finally meet you, and you're doing a great job, and we will hear you on the Robins TV soon. But it's been great to chat.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Brilliant. Good. Take care, guys.
And Matt, thanks for joining us again. And
no pros patch.
We will speak all soon.
All right. Yeah, we'll speak soon, mate. Yeah, all the best. Everyone. Take care. See you, Toby. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thanks.